go back to New Testament times and the gospel going out into the Roman world, was going out into a multicultural context where people had all sorts of beliefs and worshipped all sorts of gods. They didn't necessarily all have expertise in all the religions that they were of the peoples that they were trying to reach and so forth, but the gospel was powerful and their witness was powerful.
Hello and welcome to Independence, FIC podcast for leaders of churches here in the UK and wider afield. Whether you are a leader in an FIC church or a leader in any other kind of church, very welcome. Good to have you with us, whether you're listening or watching in. And I'm joined today by Nick McQuaker. Hello, Nick.
Hello, Adrian.
Nick is a pastor still. Are you still one of the leaders in the church?
No, I'm not anymore.
Not anymore, but for a long time, a leader in an FIC church.
That's right.
And now the ministry director of Passion for Life.
Yes.
And we've recorded some other material about Passion for Life. Do listen to that. Really important. And some really exciting things going on and some great resources to access. But we're here today to talk a bit more generally about the general climate and reaching out with the good news to people who live where we are, which are different kinds of places. I mean, I guess you ministered and you live in Haywards Heath.
Yep.
Sussex, if I got that right?
That's right, Sussex, yeah.
Particular kind of Sussex. Isn't there a West and East, or does it not work like that?
We're in West Sussex, so Sussex is two counties.
Is it? Oh, yeah, I didn't know that.
So we are West Sussex, but we're close.
Not in cricket terms.
It's just Sussex. No, it's just Sussex in cricket terms.
I hadn't realised it was two
counties. Close to the border, so we're actually right in the middle.
You are West Sussex, and I guess Haywards Heath is not hugely different from Market Harborough, where we are here. Mm. And of course, people listening are from all kinds of different places. But the thing is, the country is changing, isn't it? Mm. It doesn't matter whether you are in the leafy suburbs or whether you're in urban city centre or in villages. Actually, the country is rapidly changing.
Yeah, yeah. So we've been in Haywards Heath just coming up 30 years, and it's changed a lot over that period.
In what ways?
Just in terms of the cultural and ethnic diversity. Okay. No, and it's not like inner city London, but it has changed.
And is that especially the way the country is changing in terms of the cultural diversity that's going on? Is that the main shift?
I think it reflects that, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, as leaders, that can make us feel a little bit inadequate. Mm-hmm. And we think, I know how to reach out to people from my own community, perhaps with the same background as me. But once I start crossing cultures of all kinds, actually, whether that's age or whether it's class, whether it's ethnicity, whether it's religious background, it feels like this is a step up. It's more challenging. So it can feel overwhelming, can't it, as a leader? And you see all this diversity around you.
Yeah, I mean, there are challenges, but also I think we should think in terms of opportunity.
Yeah,
I mean, it's an amazing thing, isn't it, about the UK, how the Lord has brought the nations to us, and there's opportunity to reach people from so many different sort of nations and ethnicities just within our own borders. So there's gospel opportunity.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? Now, we're here today especially to talk about something that we organised together earlier in the year. Justin Gill, who's our intercultural advisor, and Passion for Life, we worked together to organise a forum of people who are working and to reach across these different boundaries of different kinds. And we just need to say that we're not sitting here as the experts. Yeah. We're sitting here as people who both attended this forum and benefited from it hugely, learned things. And actually, it was hugely encouraging to me, I'm guessing it was to you as well, just to hear about the breadth of what was going on. We sometimes feel there's nothing being done, and that's simply not true, is it?
No, there's a huge amount being done, as you say, that we convened the forum because we don't have the answers.
Yes.
Yeah. We needed help. We recognised we needed help from those who do have the experience.
Yes, it was a cry for help from you and I. Yes, yeah.
We invited all sorts of different practitioners, some doing more sort of academic work in this area, to come together from different church contexts as well in different parts of the country, just to discuss things together and really for people like you and me, Adrian, to sit and listen and soak it up and just learn so much from these people.
I have pages and pages of notes, and as I know you did too, and just hugely encouraging. Actually, hugely encouraging to hear that people from different faiths and from different cultural backgrounds are being saved. Now, it's harder in some areas than it is in others. Yeah. We don't want to paint a picture where everything is rosy in the garden. There are some groups which are essentially unreached in the UK and other groups where the work is really, really hard. But essentially, in everybody that was there was sharing encouragements of people who are being contacted with the gospel, who are interested, people who are being saved.
Yeah, yeah. Which, of course, you know, it, at one level, shouldn't surprise us.
No.
You know, the gospel is the power of salvation for all who believe.
That's right.
It's for all people. And the Lord is at work to save a people for his own glory from every tribe and language and nation.
Yeah. I think one of the things that really struck me about some of the stories I was hearing is that when people are brought to faith from other cultures, and especially from other religions, it can be a really costly thing.
Yeah.
Now, we know from the scriptures, of course, that following Christ is costly. But I wonder if in Western Britain, especially perhaps from our educational background or our, you know, middle-class upbringing, whatever it may be, actually, we don't really feel the weight of that in the way that people do. So it's very moving, isn't it, to hear stories of people for whom actually the cost is tangible. Family breaks, losing family ties, sometimes risk of their own life, you know, but it's a costly thing to follow Christ.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, so the focus of the forum was not just sort of reaching people from other cultures, but reaching people from other religious groups in particular. Yeah. For converts from other religions, you know, the religion they're coming out from is bound up with identity and with community and with family, and so to change religion, to leave that religion behind and embrace following Christ and identify as a Christian, that, as you say, that can mean family breaks. It can mean a sort of a loss of identity and a loss of community.
Mm. Yeah. Now, when we talk about people from other religions, we often just go straight into thinking how we reach Muslims. Mm. Muslims are the largest represented other religion, aren't they, in the UK?
That's right.
But they're not the only one.
Yeah. So I think overall, about 10% of the population would self-identify as adherents of a religion other than Christianity.
Okay.
And within that, the sort of the largest group is those who would identify as Muslim.
Right.
Then sort of followed by.
Although even within that, there will be quite distinct subgroups.
There will be subgroups within that. Both in terms of sort of which branch of Islam, also
what country,
ethnicity. So Islam and then those who identify with Hinduism or Sikhism would be the next two largest groups.
And we didn't talk about this at all at the forum, but is how we might reach Roman Catholics.
Yeah.
So you're right, we were looking at people who wouldn't identify as Christians, but there's a whole load of people who would identify as Christians who still desperately need the gospel. We mustn't forget them, must we? So we'll just mention that in passing. So it's not that we've forgotten those groups. We're focusing on those who are not identifying here as Christians. Mm. Tell us some of the challenges, first of all, there are in reaching across these divides for us.
Yeah. Well, I think there are, there's a sort of whole host of factors. There are historical factors. There's whole sort of all the issues of post-colonialism, the legacy of empire and the attitudes and that creates. There are just the sort of the social and cultural differences. Obviously, there is differences of sort of, you know, just worldview and the way that life is conceived of.
Language sometimes.
And then sort of social groupings, and me especially in some areas where there are sort of quite monolithic communities of people who would adhere to a particular religion. And they, in some ways, are sort of quite self-contained and quite hard for people from outside that community to sort of penetrate and create relationships.
Before we moved to Market Harborough, I served in East London. So I have been in that sort of community. Lived 8 years in Mile End, where a very, very large Bengali Muslim community. In fact, not just a Bengali, Sylheti Muslim community. Yep. And that's exactly like you're describing. Very hard to break into, very self-contained.
And then, I mean, I think that there are can be other sort of factors which create particular challenges. So there's obviously what's happening within the UK culturally and concerns about immigration and sort of fear of Islam and so on, which can sort of just create tension and sort of perhaps fears, both fears for people who belong to those communities and maybe fear in our own hearts as Christians, worries about sort of offending people.
Saying the wrong thing.
And then what is happening in the sort of the countries of origin? So things that are happening in India with the rise of Hindu nationalism and so on can have a bearing upon how communities within the UK view things, both those Hindu communities and those trying to reach them.
Now I think all of that makes me feel a bit overwhelmed. I think I'm not a specialist in any of these areas. I don't really understand any of these religions in enough depth to have a huge apologetic discussion about them. And I guess a lot of people do feel that way. It feels slightly overwhelming. But one of the things that came through at the forum for me was that we do need specialists in each of these areas. So we do need specialists in Islam. We do need specialists in Hinduism. But actually, there are remarkable opportunities as well. So, for example, people of other faiths are very often willing to talk about their faith. They're willing to engage in a way that people who are Christian or nominally Christian just aren't. So it's easy to be overwhelmed, isn't it? But we mustn't be.
No, absolutely. And I think that goes back to let's have confidence in the Lord being at work and confidence in the gospel. And just think about the, go back to New Testament times and the gospel going out into the Roman world. Was going out into a multicultural context where people had all sorts of beliefs and worshipped all sorts of gods. Those as Christians went out with the gospel into that world, they didn't necessarily all have expertise in all the religions that they were of the peoples that they were trying to reach and so forth, but the gospel was powerful and their witness was powerful. So let's have confidence in the gospel and the way that God uses people who are weak and at times foolish to bring about his great purposes for his glory.
So we do need the experts. I mean, the experts have a part to play, don't they? They equip us. They're able to step into situations perhaps that we couldn't step into. We do need someone who's going to stand at Hyde Park Corner and be able to have a debate that probably maybe you and I couldn't have in quite the same way because they've got the background knowledge. But there is something that each of us can do. We need to, I mean, you said to me earlier a phrase I liked, which is we've got to somehow cut through the complexity. Because there are real complexities. There's no point denying them. There are real complexities. But we do have to somehow get through those, don't we? And come out the other side.
So I think, I think it's that matter. So we're trying to cut through let's not be naive. So let's recognize the complexity. Let's realize that there are some particular challenges of reaching people from a different culture or people who would adhere to a different religious faith. But recognize that then beyond that complexity, perhaps there are just some simple things that we can sort of learn to do just to avoid making terrible sort of, cultural faux pas that just offend people and make it difficult to move forward. So I think this is where I know I need help, and where it's really helpful to listen to those who've got the understanding, experience, the expertise, and just for them to teach us some of the simple do's and don'ts.
Yeah. So there are some basic things to grapple with that will get you a long way.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the takeaways for me. And there was one particular lady, we're not going to mention names on this podcast, one particular lady who was talking about hospitality and what it means to share your house, share your home, share a meal with people from a different culture. And you know, at some level, quite basic stuff, but things that anybody could do.
I mean, so I remember just one thing she said that I wasn't aware of was visiting I think she was talking about this in the sort of particularly the Muslim context, but if you're welcomed into somebody's home and you've had a cup of tea with them, don't just get up and leave. Ask if you can leave.
Yes.
So it's just politeness. to ask your host if it's okay if you would if you could leave now. So that yeah, it's just some very simple things that it would be helpful for many of us to know and to understand.
And those sorts of things do win people over, don't they? Yes. I mean, I was reading this morning from 1 Peter 4, and you know, always be willing to give a reason for the hope you have, to do so with gentleness and respect.
Yes.
It's interesting, it's gentleness and respect. There is a sense in which showing respect to other people and their cultures is a, it's not just good practice. It is a gospel, it's a gospel command, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that, you know, we would expect that towards us. And so we must be offering that towards others as well.
That's
exactly right. Yeah. So we benefited from being at this time together. We heard lots of useful things. Where can others tap into some of this information? What are some of the places that people could go to get some of this information? Is there anywhere, or do we need to be working on something, praying for some of these things to be brought together? Because lots of people are doing good things, aren't they?
They are. So, yeah. So, I mean, I think there are lots of resources, good resources out there that can be found. I think we probably need to try and do some more to sort of just help people find them. So it's one of the things that we want to do with the Passion for Life is not just produce resources ourselves, but to do a lot of signposting to where you can find the resources that you're looking for that others have produced who've got that particular expertise. So that's something that we, in this area, we will be working on. Ahead of the mission in 2026 that Passion for Life is promoting, the Life 26 mission, we produced a set of 29 training resources, which are videos with session leaders' guides to go with them. One of those is on reaching people from other cultures with the gospel. And then there's one on particularly on reaching Hindus with the gospel and one on reaching Muslims with the gospel. So there are sort of three particular resources that have been produced by Passion for Life that are relevant to this. But we'll also, as I say, want to be sort of signposting to other things as well.
Have a look at those. They're excellent and just good to get the expertise of people who, you know, are the experts, but can also explain what they're doing. Because it doesn't always go together. And people sometimes are very good at something. They can't always explain what they're doing. So you need that match of being able to articulate what you're doing as well as being good at it yourself. Tell us a little bit more about first steps. So talk to me. I'm an average church leader. I'm averagely able in lots of ways, Mr. Mediocre perhaps is my superpower. I can see the area around me changing. We've talked about this a little bit more with our some of the things we've done, the intercultural team, but what are some of the first steps I can do, both for myself as a leader, but also leading the church? What are some of the first steps I'd want to take to make sure that we are wanting to take the gospel to others, that we're effective in taking the gospel to others? Because sometimes the first steps are the hardest.
So I think, you know, we need to have some understanding of the communities that we're trying to reach. And so, you know, if the community around us is changing, then there may be just some learning that we need to do, actually look at, you know, have our eyes open to how that community is changing, and be inquisitive as if there are newcomers coming into the community, wherever they come from, you know, which religion do they belong to, which part of the world.
So that might be macro or micro. So you could look at census data, couldn't you?
Look at census data.
See how the place is changing.
Yeah, you can you know, you can go online. The Office for National Statistics has a really useful website where you can zoom in to where your church is, and you can look at the sort of the religious makeup of those in your area at quite a detailed level. So you can look at the data, but also there's no substitute for trying to get to know people. Are there opportunities for you to just try to get to know people from these other ethnicities or religions?
And hear from other people in church.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have at a prayer meeting, you're not just looking at sort of big picture and data, but you're saying to, you know, if you've anybody here got a neighbor who comes from a different culture or different religion. Who are they? Where are they from? What are you learning? You know, just finding out people's individual stories, that can be really helpful, can't it? In building up the picture. Yeah. What about prayer? What part does prayer have in all of this? I mean, obviously, we're evangelicals, there's a big part prayer has in all of this, but how can we be praying wisely for the communities in which we live, do you think? Other than just, you know, we want to pray, Lord, save people, obviously, but what does wise praying look like in these sorts of contexts?
Well, I think I find it helpful to think how, I mean, I think we need to pray because we are totally dependent on the Lord. If the Lord is not at work, then there'll be no gospel fruit. But what is the work the Lord does? I think the Lord does a work in us, in our hearts. And it's one of the things, it's one of the things that really came out at the forum. Actually, one of the biggest problems can just be our own hearts.
Yeah.
Our own fears, our own reluctance, perhaps a lack of sufficient compassion and concern for different groups of people. So first of all, we could be praying that the Lord does the work in us, in our own hearts, in our own attitudes. Praying the Lord will give us the boldness. So the Lord does a work in us. We need to pray about that. The Lord does a work in sort of in opening doors, in circumstances, in giving us opportunities. So let's pray for those opportunities and pray for the boldness and the wisdom to make the most of them. And then the Lord does a work in the people that we're seeking to reach as he opens people's hearts to the gospel. So pray for the people that we're seeking to reach. So I think those three areas. Praying for about ourselves, our own hearts, praying for the opportunity, praying for the people we're seeking to reach.
Let's explore that last one, the first one a little bit more, because you're right, that did come through very strongly actually from one contributor, which is a helpful rebuke to us, I think, to say we need to always be asking the question, if we're not making much progress or not doing very much in this area, there may be all kinds of practical reasons. There may be all kinds of obstacles to overcome. We've got to be honest about those. But the biggest obstacle might well be our own hearts.
Yes.
I found that very convicting. I know you did too.
I did as well, yes.
That actually, it's just that, I mean, he expressed it, we just don't care enough. And it's, we've got to own that, haven't we? We've got to be able to say, yes, Lord, that is right. We haven't cared enough about this. Please forgive us. And we've got to ask for our hearts to be changed. So we want to pray for that. How else are our hearts going to be changed? What other things are going to make a difference for our hearts?
Well, I think so. Yeah, I think, I mean, it can be that we just don't care enough and we need to pray for that heart concern for lost people. Then I think often the other issue is sort of fear and lack of confidence. It's interesting how when Jesus is briefing his apostles for mission, say in Matthew chapter 10, both for the immediate mission and the long-term mission, how much Jesus addresses the topic of fear. It is fear so often with all of our witness to Christ and evangelism. It is fear that so often holds us back. Which is why, when the church gathers in the book of Acts, they're praying for boldness. And we need to recognize that boldness comes from the Spirit of God. It's not something that we generate within. So let's seek the Lord for the boldness that we need to overcome our fears. But then pray for our eyes to be open to the opportunities that are there. And for the wisdom to know how to make the most of those opportunities.
There's a value too, isn't there, in catching a heart? When you spend time with someone who has a real heart for the lost, it is infectious.
Yes.
So I think what fascinates me about this subject is it's a spiritual need that we have for our hearts to be melted, to have that compassion for the lost as Jesus had for the lost. And we need to pray for that. How does God give it to us? Well, he answers our prayers very often through ordinary means.
Yes.
Putting someone alongside us in church who has a real heart for the lost. Every prayer they pray is for people to be reached. And that starts to rub off on you, doesn't it? Or you hear a story from someone in church, place of testimony in church, very powerful. You hear a story from someone in church who said, well, you know, I had this conversation with someone this week and this is how it went. So yeah. there's a value, isn't there, in the community of God thinking about these things together, not yeah. just us as individuals. There's yeah, a place
so,
for that.
Yeah, yeah. So we you know, we to take a step back from that, I would say that I think we actually need to recognize that a growing heart for lost people, whatever their ethnicity or religion or no religion, a growing heart for lost people is actually, it's part of a growth in Christian maturity.
Right. Okay. So not to detach it from that.
So I think that can be a deficit where we look at somebody that we think of as being very, very mature in the faith, and they've maybe got lots of Bible knowledge and theological understanding. But actually, I think the Lord would say that actually, if they haven't grown in compassion for lost people and a heart to seek and to save them, now, what is Christian maturity? It is becoming more like Christ.
Yes, yes.
What is an aspect, you know, a key part of the character of Christ is he came to seek and to save the lost. And so we're not growing in Christlikeness if we don't have a heart to seek and to save the lost. Then that needs to include those from different religions. Yeah. But how do we grow up in Christ? We grow up together within the church community. Mm. So actually, the community we belong to has a bearing on my own personal growth in Christian maturity. And as individuals, we contribute to that so that we grow up together, which is where those who do have that real heart can be such a help and encouragement to us.
Yeah.
But then I think the other thing what I would say is it's much easier to, in a sense, to have a concern and a heart for real people that we know, rather than just a general group of people
so
as a category,
ideas,
as an abstract idea. Okay. So actually, getting to know people,
yes,
getting to know our neighbours, getting to know people in our community. Making the effort to do that so that then, you know, and then begin to pray for them. And I think as we get to know people, real people, and we pray for them, then that the Lord grows in us that heart.
Yeah. Thank you. That's really helpful. Saved. And we need to match that, don't we, with theological convictions.
Yeah.
So I think one of the things we can do as leaders is we need to be clear about judgment.
Yeah.
We need to be clear about hell. We need to be clear that people really are lost without Christ.
Yeah.
And I think if we start fudging those issues ourselves or with our people, then we lose momentum. So here's an example. My wife and I go dancing on Thursday nights. Mm-hmm. Don't ask any questions about that. It's a secret. Please don't let anybody know. So we go dancing on Thursday nights. We've met quite a lot of people there. Mm-hmm. And it's great. We've got to know people. I think probably in terms of conversations that we've had and friendships that are developing, it's the most fruitful thing we've done in the 8 years we've been here. So it's been really useful. But if that is not matched with a deep knowledge of what it means to die without Christ, then that's just social. It's just nice.
It's
a thing still, but it's never going to lead anywhere, is it?
Absolutely right. Yes. Yeah. And we actually have to take our beliefs seriously.
Yeah. Yes.
You know,
they're not just ticking the box when we do the annual renewal. We're saying that we really do believe in these things and they matter.
Yeah.
We believe that God is a holy God. We believe that we're all sinful from birth. We believe that there's a consequence of that, and we believe that Jesus is a saviour.
Yeah. And there is a last day coming.
Yes.
And Jesus exactly will be the judge of the last day.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's a really good place to end, Nick. Thanks so much for joining us. You are learning, Nick. I'm learning about this as we go on. Just to reiterate again, we're not the experts, are we? We're learning as we go. We've really benefited from learning about this stuff. We're looking forward to putting it into practice. So thanks for sharing with us. Thanks for your honesty. And we look forward to seeing you soon. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please do rate and review it because it helps other people find us. Thanks very much.